I'm in handling one case now where father insisted the mother homeschool and now raised it and made an issue of it in the court and tried to marginalize the homeschooling parent. And then once that happens and then the testing and the assessment is demanded, it hasn't quite reached that point in Michigan yet, but there are efforts to get it there.
They're trying to sort of halfway measure what they're, to some extent, whether it's Ohio, Michigan, whatever. They realize the opposition is a strong private religious homeschool, and so what they're sort of doing is trying to co-opt a few of these back through charter schools, which basically are public schools. And so what they do there is the curriculum is developed by people say, well, we want local control. What often you don't realize or people don't realize is that within their revised standard course of study or standards of learning, you'll find this little slipped phrase that says, shall be aligned with national standards.
Yeah, and absolutely it is there, and Michigan does have a well-developed system of charter schools that are doing exactly as you say. In fact, some of them are even Steiner schools, Rudolf Steiner, which is, I mean, that's the deepest occult almost you can go. It almost would make Alice Bailey blush.
Now the Waldorf schools are part of that, and the way they push through the conformity, as John and others and Barrett Stanner said, and the consensus is there's a process. In one group, as I mentioned, Tavistock has his T groups, and there are theory of social turbulence where you throw a bunch of crises and you go into psychological treat. The other, more heavy, is the NEA and its national training labs through what they call human relations sensitivity training, which they actually identify as, quote, brainwashing. And the third mechanism comes from the Industrial Areas Foundation, which was set up by Saul Alinsky, who had acknowledgement to Lucifer at the Vatican. And Hillary did her senior thesis on him. She loves him. They use a Delphi technique where they try and isolate people who are fundamentalists or extreme,
right,
blah, blah, blah. And that's when, after that happens, the persecution comes as well. As H.G. Wells said, quote, many will die protesting the New World Order.
Right.
Well, where do we go now? Maybe we should go one by one and start to wrap the thing down. It feels good on this program because when we did the show on outcome-based education, I think it was 10 years ago when we went into that program. I think, Barrett, you were on the panel for that show. I don't think anybody else was. It's here. I felt very uneasy going into it at 8:30 in the morning because I wasn't sure we were going to be able to capture the essence of it. By 3:30 in the afternoon, I knew we'd gotten it. I went outside the station and went, yahoo! You know, we actually managed to get it on tape. But where are we going now? I mean, what does this mean? Anything you want to suggest to people listening? Let's start with the East Coast again. I'll go to Dennis, and we'll hear from you. Dennis Cuddy in North Carolina.
Well, first of all, nothing's going to be accomplished without prayer to God. That's absolutely essential. The second thing is, through these processes I just mentioned, people have been turned off. They're now, you know, watching their ball games and eating pizzas, and they could care less about partial birth abortion or whatever it is. And so it's going to have to start in reverse against this through a grassroots type of movement, not as the student movement in the early 60s said, here are our 20 demands. You would need at your local level to pick an issue you can win on, organize around that, whether it's taxpayers against illiteracy or whatever it is. And then you build a base on that, because only when these political figures who are beholden to the, as Constance said, the sort of corporate fascism that's running rampant, the only thing they are concerned about is if their reelection or reappointment is threatened. And the only way that happens is if you are part of an organized resistance that is here to stay, not a 4,000-member rally against sex ed for one time, but if you're a growing group, it can start small through listening to talk shows like this, Dr. Stans and others, and letters to the editor, whether it's force busing, whatever you have, and you build some support there, you gain credibility so the press can't undermine you as some, you know, nutty person. Then you move from there to your second, third, and larger issues. Then they'll start paying attention to you, but only when you do that will anything happen, because the public in general said, well, hey, we're against NAFTA and GATT by 75%, and the people beholden and watching to the transnational corporations said, the heck with that, we're passing them anyway, regardless of whether, you know, the jobs are going overseas. So I would say that is a useful tactic to start with. It's going to be a problem because people are almost looking for instant solutions, and if you can't do something instantly, they'll go back to their pizzas and ball games. But we've at least got to try, and prayer to God is a starting point.
What do you just say to those people? Constance, you sort of talked about this earlier on. Well, this is in God's prophecy, and it's all going to happen anyway, and we're going to be raptured out of here. So let's go back to the pizza and ball games you were talking about.
Well, I think it is happening. I think it is prophetic. I think it's late in the process to stop some of these, frankly. And I've got my problems with some of the networks we formed to fight it also, because those can be so easily co-opted and have been co-opted. There was an awful lot of disparagement about what was called Lone Ranger evangelism. And I'm not so convinced that Lone Ranger evangelism is a bad thing. We all have our own circles of influence. I'm fortunate. I know politicians and attorneys and judges. And there's times that I'm presented with opportunities to speak to these folks. I have my radio program. I've tried to give the Detroit community a healthy mix of exposing the legal community to the Christian community and vice versa, and educating people in the spheres that I come in contact with. And it's a rare day that goes by that I don't have somebody who's even well-known in public life calling me up and saying, I just saw Javier Solana here, and this is what's going on, and I started watching, and I've observed this. And I've had numerous people say to me, you know, when you first talked to me, I thought you were crazy, but I started watching for myself, and it jumped out at me everywhere. And I think if we do that, and if we pray silently that the Lord will open these ears and open these hearts, that those prayers are going to get answered. I don't know if we can stop it or not. I do know that we managed to educate the entire world on the New Age movement when I felt like a lone ranger doing it initially back in 1981 when I started the struggle. And the word is out, and the word is getting out on this as well. And I think the battle is the Lord's. I think we do have to start the day on our knees, and that we do have to pray, and that we stay in the Lord's will, because we ourselves are prone to deception, and that we have to just really pray that the Lord will give us the right mix of spiritual moxie, and when there are opportunities to throw five smooth stones at these things and dislodge it, to do it that way as well. And it's, Dennis has wonderful ideas. I have my ideas. The Lord is going to lead us through this thing. He promised nothing greater than we could stand. But are we going to get raptured out of everything, or are we going to take dominion over everything? I think both are forms of spiritual deception that are going to lead to the type of disillusionment that our Lord said would result in many falling away, and you will be hated of all men for my name's sake.
Okay, Kansas County in Michigan, in Los Altos, California, Barrios.
I just first invite people to come to our website and read some of the ways you can equip your children to take a stand in the middle of this spiritual war. For example, our section on the armor of God, a chart on the brainwashing which shows what scriptures. I mean, this is a time we need to know the truth that will resist the deceptions. And go through the chart section and study the chart on brainwashing and the scriptures that will resist every part of that brainwashing process, primarily the Hegelian dialectic, but it's much more complex, and you need to know how to recognize and resist it. One of my favorite scriptures is, we have, it's in Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 20, verse 20.
Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us this evening Steve Quayle, and we're going to be talking about his book, Genetic Armageddon: Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monster. Steve, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's a pleasure, and I look forward to our discussing these really pertinent matters together.
it's one of the most amazing things. Of course, the average individual really doesn't understand what has been accomplished from the genetic point of view, starting with a special virus cancer project, and then development of the techniques to being able to take genes from one species and put them into another, or even take genes from a human being and put them into a plant, or really the things that have been done to create new diseases, but even more frightening than that, to engineer human beings. So why don't you tell our listeners how you happen to become concerned about that and where you think we're headed?
Well, first of all, the title of my book, Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters, I start out and try in detail for people that there is a very sinister and, I believe, supernatural background group of individuals that are trying to actually breed out of humanity that which God created humanity to be, and that's obviously a reflection of his image and likeness. You know, it was less than 60 days ago, Dr. Stan, that the BBC carried a story that the scientists were working at combining the egg of a male and a female and producing a she-male. And what we see openly acknowledged in the press and in different stories that leak out is absolutely child's play compared to the technological innovations that have taken place in this whole field of genetic engineering. And when I call it the book, Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters, what I'm trying to show people is that it's, if you take even the basic understanding of life and the challenge that it is to the scientific community to play God, and by the way, you and I both know they are not God, but the attempt to play God and to actually come up with what Nietzsche called the Übermensch, or the Overman, or the Superman, it's the whole philosophy that pervaded the Hitlerian era, and a lot of the occultists that were advising Adolf Hitler were very much into building and, if you will, bringing back the Aryan race, which is a mythical race out of the annals of a lot of, I guess you'd say it's almost a syncretistic approach to giving a supernatural background to the Germanic people.
Most people really don't understand that what Hitler did, according to Rudolf Hess, was simply applied science. And, of course, they picked up the ideas on eugenics from the United States, from Margaret Sanger and the people who surrounded her. And, of course, the reason they wanted to get rid of the Jews was because they wanted to purify the gene pool. That's why they wanted to kill the gypsies. That's, of course, why they wanted to kill the mentally defective and the people who had mental diseases. And then, of course, the people who had physical disabilities, because somehow their genes would, of course, pollute the gene pool. And, of course, they also killed 12 million Christians, but after all, they must have inferior genes as well. We never talk about all the Christians who died in the concentration camps. We only talk about the Jews because, of course, they totally manipulate our mentality. But you're absolutely right, Steve, and this is what people don't understand, is that these ideas that were so prevalent in Hitler's time of breeding the Superman, of course, were brought to America by many of the German scientists brought here after the war. These were Nazi scientists. Many of them should have been tried and convicted for their war crimes. Instead, they were brought here and given comfortable pensions and allowed, of course, to continue their nefarious work here, or experimentation in psychological control and biological warfare in space. Certainly, Wernher von Braun, nobody ever tells you he was a member of the SS, and certainly there was a man named Rudolf, General Rudolf, who'd been responsible for killing 20,000 Jews, and yet he was one of the leaders of our space program, never punished for it. Eventually, he was sent back, but most of the others, people like General Strughold, for whom the Space Center is named in Texas, also a Nazi war criminal, was never punished for his crime. So these ideas then spread from Germany, and they came from America, they went to Germany, they came back here. And now, of course, many of our scientists see nothing wrong with science because, of course, they have no God, they don't believe in God, and they are going to create this Superman, as you point out.
Well, and I think that's a very good overview. Now, remember this, that what's interesting, Dr. Stan, is in my research for the book, it was interesting to find out that the Sanger Trust is one of the big funders of the Human Genome Project. And obviously Margaret Sanger, the mother of eugenics, and her whole contribution to infusing not only the Hitlerian view, but I believe the view that most people in the scientific and academic world hold secretly to date. Also, the Department of Energy was involved. You've got to ask yourself this. Why would the Department of Energy be the primary funding source for the Human Genome Project, and what really are they looking for? You know, it's a fascinating investigation that I undertook. When you start seeing the same names pop up in history, or their progeny, their children, if you will, their forebears, the interesting and unique position that the Third Reich not only played but continues to play, and this is something that comes right out of the pit of hell, that it's beyond startling. For instance, let me take you to secrets in the Antarctic. During the year 2001, some of the world's brightest and most famous scientists seemed to die almost in unison over about a 4 to 6 month period. Well, one of the men that died was a man by the name of David Wynn Williams, who was one of the foremost astrobiologists in the world. He was in the Antarctic looking for, if you will, primordial life forms that may have come to the Earth in the Martian rocks. Now, interestingly enough, during Hitler's reign, most people are unaware that in 1947 there was an operation conducted by the U.S. military where we actually went to war with the leftovers of the German U-boats and a lot of their commanders in the Antarctic. It was called Operation High Jump. Some of our most famous admirals were involved, Admiral Nimitz, Admiral Forrestal, and Secretary of Defense Forrestal, but Admiral Byrd and Nimitz and a couple other of the more powerful Navy commanders. And this is something that we undertook, and again, it's Operation High Jump, which is on my website. The point that I'm trying to make is that the Nazis, even back in 1947, were tampering and messing with the field of eugenics, and the development of that whole area of endeavor to them is even today being played out, or we're reminded of it in the death of David Wynn Williams, who, interestingly enough, was hit on his bicycle in about the same area where the present Dr. Kelly was murdered. And so what I'm trying to do in this book is to show that there is a group of scientists that have gone overboard to make transgenic species. Transgenic means, obviously, the combining of human and animal DNA, crossing all of the boundaries that God himself ordained and over in Genesis, after their kind. And what comes to the reader's mind and the listener's mind is, boy, this is like an unseen hand that is manipulating and guiding mankind to its ultimate rendezvous with what I would call biological hell. And that's exactly what I lay out in the chapters, that what it really means to have biological hell. What is happening in the scientific community is promising, basically, you'll be able to live forever in your clone body. You'll be able to use the soul catcher chip, which is a device that British Telecom has patented that can literally download every single sensory observation and response that the human brain has ever had. And by obviously allowing mankind the hope of eternal life and eternal debauchery, they never have to face the judgment of the living God.
For thou shalt be as God. That was the promise,
yes,
in the Garden of Eden.
Yes, and this is kind of interesting because, again, I sometimes run out of adjectives, because when you're dealing with this sick and this group of people that are absolutely gods with little g's in their mind, and they are actually at total war with not only the God of heaven, but the Christians, the true believers, it becomes apparent that there is such a desire to not only manipulate, control, and manufacture a group of beings that are separate and apart from humanity, but the C word comes in, and that's control. The whole area of nanotechnology, molecular machines, which is taking pretty much the world now by storm, at least the venture capital market, and the venture capitalists want in on this big time, micro-robotics and the surveillance. You know, Dr. Stan, you and I used to talk about this years and years ago, that what the society would be like in the coming dark ages, and I'm saying we're there now, this whole idea of surveilling everything we think, do, and say is in the image Big Brother watches today.
Well, why don't you, for our listeners there who don't know what nanotechnology is, or a couple of those other phrases that you use, nanotechnology is one of the most amazing things I've ever heard of. Could you explain what nanotechnology is and these other new forms of technology? And really, they are revolutionizing everything. People have no concept at all of what you're even speaking of.
Sure. Imagine machinery the size of molecules. Nanotechnology is simply the manufacturing of very, very, very small machines. By small machines, we're talking about a billionth of a meter. We're talking about things that are absolutely on the atomic level. Microrobotics is similar to nanotechnology in that we're talking about robots that are small enough to be injected into the human body that can be programmed to attack, for instance, a cancer cell or a specific type of cell, to actually repair cells or to destroy cells. And when we're talking about the soul catcher chip, that is a microprocessor that is so elaborate and so phenomenally small that British Telecom, again, spent billions and billions to develop this to take the electrical impulses. And by the way, there's an actual patent for it and everything, so this is not science fiction. This is science fact. And by combining these three disciplines or fields of scientific endeavor, nanotechnology, microbiology, and genetic engineering, we're getting into the place, too, that I deal with, where we're actually getting into a cyborg-type area where you'll be combining human DNA with literally machinery to produce the supermen. Even the Defense Department has given literally hundreds of millions of dollars worth of grant money to be able to equip the ultimate soldier. He won't need to sleep. He'll be empowered with an exoskeleton, which is a modern-day suit of armor with all sorts of articulating joints that he can run at 30 miles an hour and carry 300 pounds of equipment. Again, it's the doing away with the humanness of mankind and bringing in this transmorphed, in other words, this changing form, and creating a man. And it's interesting, Dr. Stan, how it all ends up headed to the warrior state. We're not talking about creating necessarily better scientists, although some of the denialists who are trying to promote this say, it will only be used for the good of mankind. I have a statement. If you understand the fruit of evil, you will miss the root of evil. If you understand the root of evil, it explains the fruit of evil. So when we're talking about these areas of science, and this is all current stuff, most people are simply unaware of it, and they don't understand the ramifications. They hear the word nanotechnology, genetic engineering, micro-robotics, transgenic, across species manipulation. They hear about the Human Genome Project. And I say to most people, they'd be surprised to know that Dr. Mengele of Nazi fame was also looking for the Aryan mummies, if you will. The Aryans were the giants of Genesis 6 fame, and they believed that they could actually find them, they could reconstitute the giants and actually build their super race. And that's obviously the background that went into Steven Spielberg's Raiders of the Lost Ark movie, the first one. Now, the Nazis, as you know, had a very select occult group called the Annenerbe, and the Annenerbe were the ones that were absolutely looking for the third eye in people and looking for the power centers and human spies. And they made Dr. Ishii, who was the head of the Japanese biological experimentation programs, look like a little leaguer when it came to the gruesomeness of their experiments. And this is all stuff that most people do not recognize that the Third Reich were up to. As you so eloquently pointed out, this is what we imported into this country, and this has been what I call the background black science that has been dominating and dictating to our contemporary scientists for the last 50 years.
All right, now for our listeners out there who see that, gee, this sounds really pretty far out. First of all, if you'd like to document the occult foundation of the Third Reich, there's a wonderful book. It's written by a group of occultists, Corinne McLaughlin, Gordon Davidson. The book is called Spiritual Politics. It's out of print, but you should be able to get it through your library. And in that book, of course, why they talk about how Winston Churchill intervened at Nuremberg and insisted that no mention be made of the occult foundation of the Third Reich. And you can't understand the Third Reich unless you understand where Hitler got his supernatural powers. He was able to, you know, hold an audience for 4 to 6 hours just simply talking to them. How he was able to dominate others, because he had mystical powers. And there's been a great deal written about Hitler and the Third Reich, the occult Reich, but this is really the foundation of it. So you must understand, you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand the occult foundation. Did you know that Saddam Hussein had a sorcerer who was advising him and helping to keep him in power? We have that article, just reading it this evening. You're not going to read that in the Wall Street Journal or the mainline press. This comes out of the Washington Times, probably snuck in there by accident. But behind everything going on today, behind the Clinton administration, you remember when Hillary was bringing Gene Houston in to conjure up the spirits of Eleanor Roosevelt and Mohandas Gandhi? Everybody thought that was funny. No, it wasn't funny at all, ladies and gentlemen, because the occult is right there. And at that time, it was working right out of the White House. And then this nanotechnology that Steve is talking about, you can go up on the Internet and look up nanotechnology. You'll find out about it. They can actually create machines that are simply at the molecular level. And these machines can be targeted to go in to attack certain parts of your body, to reconstruct certain parts of your body. And you say, that couldn't happen. Well, you better find out what's really going on behind the scenes, because you're not going to read about this most places. But Steve is right on. The technology that is available today is beyond really the comprehension of the finite mind. And, of course, this is what the scientists have done, because, of course, they have no restraints on what they do. They're not concerned that they may be playing with things that could destroy humanity, because, of course, it's all done in the name of science.
Well, one of the chapters I deal with, chapter 6 of my book, Dead Scientists Tell Tales, this is something that's interesting. You know, Dr. Stan, we're talking about the death of the premier and eminent scientists and everything from molecular biology to genetic sequencing. We're talking about people that are just the who's who in the world of microbiology who have been murdered mysteriously. And that basically prompts a lot of questions. What were they working on?
And of course, the questions we will never know, because of course this will be considered to be top secret in the name of national security. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with Steve Quayle, and if you have any questions or comments on this concept, his book is Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters. Well, I'll tell you how to get the book as well. We'll be right back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Steve Quayle, his book, Genetic Armageddon, and of course you were talking about the scientists who are dying under such mysterious circumstances, and this is nothing new. I mean, certainly we've seen this sort of thing in the past, and certainly we saw a scientist just this last couple of weeks over in Great Britain who had challenged what the British government was saying as far as exaggeration of the threat of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And, of course, he's writing emails, talking to his friends, saying, I'll see you tomorrow. And then suddenly, a few hours later, he's found very dead, his wrist slashed. And, of course, if you read the papers, it is probably a suicide. Well, what do you mean probably a suicide? Either a suicide or not a suicide. In all probability, of course, he was a scientist who knew too much. And, of course, it embarrassed Tony Blair and the men who surround him.
Well, I think, you know, the other issue that people have got to understand is that when you take these scientists and you find out, like Dr. David Kelly was very good friends with Dr. Wiley. Dr. Wiley is a gentleman that was like the who's who in the world of molecular biology. When you take their relationships and you understand that Dr. David Kelly was the head of Porton Down, which is the British government's top secret bioweapons and chemical laboratory, and fascinatingly enough, it was Dr. Kelly who was not only scientifically working there, but Dr. Stan, he had the control of Porton Down for a number of years. In other words, he also knew where all the skeletons were buried. And when you understand that it takes a real stretch of imagination to say that all these gentlemen just had bad days and just passed into eternity because they were microbiologists, we're talking about Dr. Pashnik, who was a Russian defector that pretty much figured out and was highly acclaimed and praised in Russia before he defected. He's the one that figured out how to aerosolize Ebola and some of the most virulent pathogens in the world. And he, interestingly enough, was a friend of Dr. Wiley, and all these guys knew each other. And what people have got to understand is they now have such weaponized versions of what are called chimera, or some people pronounce it chimera out of Greek mythology, half animal, half human, but they have these viruses now that are race specific, they're blood type specific. Any type of genetic marker that you can identify, you can absolutely design a bioweapon. And this is what's fascinating, because Dr. Wootton Bassan in South Africa went to trial about a year ago, and interestingly enough, his trial was met with a kind of like a hung jury, and nothing more was said. But his whole essence of research was one of the premier scientists who developed these weapons that are absolutely deadly. And when I say deadly, we're not talking about a 20-30% mortality rate. We're talking about stuff that gets up into the 80% and 90%. Obviously, they're not happy unless they've got 100%. And I want to go back to some of the books that have been written on Hitler. You cannot understand where all this stuff originated until you understand that the occult, in other words, men in contact with evil spirits, were getting information that enabled them to make the giant leaps and bounds, accomplishments, that's a better word, that so many of these scientists were able to make. It's not like it's in their own understanding.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there for just a minute. We're going to bring our guests back. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is, of course, Steve Quayle. And Steve is talking about, of course, what most people really don't want to believe or certainly don't understand, and that is that many of these scientists are in touch with the supernatural. And, of course, you can go in the background of Thomas Edison. How many people, of course, benefit from Thomas Edison's wonderful discoveries, but how many people realize that he was a disciple of Madame Blavatsky, who was a Luciferian, and, of course, Thomas Edison would go into trances, and he'd come up with all these ideas, and very similar things occurred as far as Tesla was concerned, and certainly one of the greatest scientists of all time. But where did he get his ideas from? And if you you begin to study the background of Tesla, who was a very close associate of and competitor with Thomas Edison, he too seemed to have these mystical qualities about him. So, of course, that was in the last century and even before that. But, of course, why should we be surprised to find out that many of our scientists today are tapping into these same mystical foundations for their knowledge? Go ahead, Steve.
Well, a great example of that, and this is one that really gets a lot of people uptight. Albert Einstein was talking about even the theory of relativity, that he received it in a dream at night, and he saw two demons drawing the formula out on a blackboard. Now, when most people deal with history, they'll take certain pieces or segments out of these scientists' lives, but they won't look at the scientific life in whole. And by the way, you know, Einstein obviously was very, very bright, let's say, but look at all of these things that result ultimately in technology that is designed to destroy mankind. It's even the point where Oppenheimer, one of the developers of the atom bomb during the Manhattan Project, was asked, and this is kind of a telling statement, he's asked if his reflection on what he had done, and basically quotes some of the Hindu Vedas and claims that he's become like Gurkha, the destroyer of worlds. He went on record, Dr. Stan, as saying that, you know, he believed that there were ancient civilizations. Now, understand, Oppenheimer was a genius, but here's a guy that talks about, in 1947, he's talking about civilizations in an antiquity that ultimately destroyed themselves. You know, I quote Ecclesiastes a lot, and one of the favorite passages I have, there is nothing new under the sun, Solomon speaking, for that which will be has already been. And I say again, and if you understand the supernatural and occult root of this technology, then the activities and the technology is predictable. And with every single, and I don't think there's an exception, maybe someone could tell me an exception, but it's the two-edged sword. It's a sort of Damocles that hangs over our head. The point being that, well, there are good outcomes to some of this technology. The motivation behind it and the desire behind it is to destroy. And that's the basis of the book Genetic Armageddon. Armageddon meaning the final battle of history. And Genetic Armageddon, my viewpoint is expressed, I think, fairly clearly in the book, is that we are fighting for our identity as image bearers of a living God. And I see this as a supernatural attempt to destroy the very last vestiges. You know, and a lot of people have a problem with that word supernatural, but for a long time, those who denied God, the God is dead movement, they painted themselves into a corner, and they had to ask the evil spirits to paint them out of the corner.
Well, you know, back in 1970, in Military Review, which is the professional journal of the U.S. military, there's an article, the lead article is written by Carl Larson, and it's entitled Genetic Engineering. Now, this is 33 years ago. And here they're talking about the United States is intensifying its development of ethnic weapons designed to selectively target and eliminate specific ethnic groups who are susceptible due to genetic differences and variations in DNA. And they were talking, of course, about developing chemical weapons, you know, because certain races would react differently to different chemicals because they would have different enzymes, and certain races could not tolerate these chemical weapons at all. Others could. In other words, you could put the white and the black together, and they would kill only black, or Arab or Hispanic. And they were planning this in November of 1970. We have the article out of Military Review. And, of course, this has been going on ever since then. People don't understand that we are investing tremendous amounts of money, learning exciting, new, wonderful ways to kill large numbers of people. In fact, to kill specific races. And unless you understand that behind this whole move towards the Aryan man was the desire to kill non-Aryan races. And I happen to be an Aryan. But I'm also a Christian, and I know Steve is as well. And it's about time the American people begin to understand. Of course, when you're dealing with science without moral restraint, of course, you're laying the foundation for terrible, terrible destruction. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 as we discuss Genetic Armageddon. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it's coming, and it's coming at a frightening pace. Steve?
Yes, sir.
Okay, how can people get your book?
They can call me at 1-800-424-7870.
All right, fine. And what we're saying may sound very far-fetched to the average individual, but you must understand we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on the political, ideological, cultural, yes, and on a scientific battlefield. And, of course, it's important that you understand what's really going on. Our military and ours is investing amazing amounts of money to develop these technologies, which will be used, I believe, to breed the Superman. All right. Well, Steve, now, why don't you explain to our listeners a little bit about this situation in the Antarctic, because I've never heard of that before, and we thought the war ended back in 1945, but there were actually some of the German submarines that survived that?
Oh, absolutely. An interesting points in history. This is one of the most overlooked, most important issues of World War II. When Hitler knew that the Third Reich was meeting defeat, Admiral Dönitz, and that's spelled D-O-E-N-I-T-Z, took the U-boats and they went to Antarctica, and they actually founded an under-the-ice cavernous base, and it was called New Schwabenland. New Schwabenland was interesting from the standpoint that given the Nazis' preoccupation with everything from the lost continent of Atlantis to obviously the search in Tibet for the Tibetan giants, they were planning on building, and according to history, did build one of the most elaborate underground bases in the world in the Antarctic. Now, again, most people say, well, this is crazy, and that's why on my website, and let me give out my website because they need to know that this is on its own link on my nav bar. It's called Operation High Jump, H-I-G-H-J-U-M-P. And it became an obsession with the U.S., especially U.S. military and primarily U.S. Navy, to find this base, and it was stated that a lot of the secrets of the Third Reich were deposited there. This was not only to be a time capsule, but this was to be the continuing base of operations, even though they would concede defeat and parts of the German military would surrender. There were other parts that were busy hiding away not only the treasures, but the scientific knowledge and inventions of the Third Reich.
Well, of course, we know that many of the Nazis went to South America under Operation Paperclip, and not only did they go to South America, but the OSS helped them to go to South America, and people like Dr. Mengele and Klaus Barbie and Martin Bormann and many others went to South America, and of course, we did absolutely nothing. The only one who was ever repatriated was Adolf Eichmann, and that was simply because the Simon Wiesenthal group of Nazi hunters tracked him down. But we actually went right along with the rest of the Nazis staying in South America. And you have to ask yourself, why, until you understand that behind all the political things that are going on today are these powerful spiritual forces. The book I'm referring to is called Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt. An interesting study is to try to get a copy of that book today. Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt. I have a copy, and one of these days I'll do one of my newsletters based upon that. And she was actually a correspondent for major newspapers in New York. She's not a flaky individual, but she did a great job. And, of course, one printing, and then the book goes out of print. And the last time I saw them, the copy I got, I think, was $130. Fortunately, one of our supporters got that for us. The book on Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, the story of Martin Bormann in Southern California, also written by a well-acclaimed reporter, that was $230, I believe. These are almost impossible to get. That was the cheapest one. There were some $300 and $400 copies of these books. Why? Because somebody's buying them up, because the last thing they want is for the American people to learn the truth. So basically, of course, now I've never heard of this Operation High Jump, but where did the information on that come from, Steve? I know you're very careful in your documentation, but I've never read about that before.
Well, it comes from the Navy archives, and some of the links I've gotten to, or I present, are the actual military documents that were naming the ships that took that were present during the operation. As I say, Admiral Byrd, Admiral Nimitz, from which, you know, the aircraft carrier. Interestingly enough, most people don't know that Forrestal was murdered. He was wanting to come clean. There was a real desire in Forrestal's life, Dr. Stan, to let the American people know what was really going on and what had really taken place in the encounters between the Third Reich and the supernatural, evil spirits was what they were. Also, to talk about the whole phenomenon of UFOs, flying saucers, which, by the way, have been in antiquity. That's nothing new. You know, most people try and put it into the Roswell timing, and fascinating enough, Roswell took place at about the same time as Operation High Jump.
1947, right.
1947. And a couple of the German U-boat captains went on record as late, and the last ones, I think, passed away in 1980. One of them is on record as stating, we need to tell the world what we know and what we've discovered. And the other German U-boat captain who wrote a book said, that would undermine everything I've already said, and besides, look what they've done to us, what they know we were working on, let alone what they don't know. And that's one of the most mysterious discourses in history. So again, most of the information comes out of everything from naval archives to eyewitnesses, and it's like it's a huge story. And when you say you never heard about it, I never heard about it until I started investigating this whole, where did the Annenerbe, that was the specific group within the Third Reich that was so into the occult, where were those guys? Where did they go? And when I tracked them to Antarctica, then I started doing all of my investigation. That's what comes right up in your face is Antarctica. Now, look at what goes on in Antarctica today. You've got what I would call a supposed climatic research going on, and they seem to always show a guy with a weather balloon, you know, looking at the ozone hole.
Yeah, I never could figure why they're spending so much time down there, and why they just can't do that with satellites or something.
Well, because there's a whole lot that goes on there. And when I'm talking about the underground base, according to the eyewitnesses who have been there even in contemporary times, we're talking about something that is so massive that we're not talking about like something like a field house for a university underground. We're talking about a vast, cavernous, almost like a city. And you notice the Russians are down there, we're down there. And again, most everything that's important goes on under the ice. On my website, I also show actual photomicrographs, courtesy of NASA, of some of the most strange-looking bacteria that have ever been photographed. They're not of this world. Now imagine this. Imagine that those things were to get out, and they're incredibly virulent. They've been frozen in the ice. The Nazis knew this, and they were culturing them. And imagine that somebody's already developed a biological weapon based on microbes that have been frozen for thousands of years in the ice, and they bring it forth and release it on a population. They've got the vaccine or the antidote, whatever case may be, and you've got the ideal killing machine, something not of this earth. And this may sound crazy, but this is exactly what David Wynne Williams was working on when he had his unfortunate accident. And when I say accident, the statistical probability of 22 of the foremost scientists in the world, including the top Israeli scientists, some of the top Russian scientists, the top British scientists, and the top American scientists, who all had this one thread in common. They were the top men in the world, and I believe the reason that they were all murdered, if you will, in sequence and in the time frame they were, is so that whoever is planning on unleashing this plague upon the earth, so it couldn't be tracked back to them, and so that there could not be the development of a vaccine apart from them.
Oh, now, of course, what is your website? You mentioned Operation High Jump, but what is your website?
My website is www.stevequayle.com.
Okay, stevequayle.com. And, of course, you want to get that, and then you go to the Operation High Jump area, and, of course, begin looking underneath that, and then track this story down. That I've known Steve. I wouldn't put him on if I didn't have a lot of confidence in his the fact he really has done the research on this. And the fact that if you are out there in the listening audience, you've never heard about this before, is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, what actually happened to this this submarine base in Antarctica? Was it eventually, of course, discovered and destroyed?
No, it was not destroyed. It was discovered and occupied.
No, but what happened, of course, to the submarines? And did the submarines return to Germany or what?
No, a couple of the later U-boats that were the last U-boats that were accounted for. I mentioned two of the German submariners who turned themselves in. They turned themselves in Chile, okay? But so many of the German U-boats that were unaccounted for were still in the Antarctic. And it appears that since that time, the United States government primarily has been involved in the occupation of that. Let me share something else that most people need to understand. in ancient antiquity, and you know, Dr. Stan, my I guess you'd say love of life has been tracking down ancient myths and legends and putting feet to them where they were real and not just somebody had too much cactus to smoke some night. But bringing these facts out, it's been interesting that all of the great civilizations of the world always talked about large caverns, and today most of what we know as top secret military bases or the continuity of government bases, i.e. the place the bureaucrats will go when all hell is unleashed on this planet, are always related to ancient sites, always, and I mean there is no exception to this rule, always related to ancient sites where, for instance, previous groups of different people had gone underground. It's true in South America, it's mostly and very true in Australia, where we've got the whole Pine Gap thing. We're dealing with a lot of curiosity. You know, the reason why most of the artifacts that relate and document and are evidence to what I'm talking about are uniquely seized and the people threatened with everything from death to, you know, imprisonment is because we've been so mind-controlled through revisionist history that the true history, i.e. Operation High Jump's a good example, is kept from our eyes. And it usually takes investigators like you, like me, like others, to go out and dig this stuff out for the people to show them that, look, this is real. This really happened.
Yes, there are really so many amazing stories. You mentioned Dr. Ishii, and of course that was Dr. Shiro Ishii. He was a colonel in the Japanese military who ran a death camp in Manchuria, or an experimental camp, where the number of the survivors of the Bataan death march were taken, and then they were used horrible experiments done on these people, and of course many of them were killed. Of course they recorded all the they would inject them with various diseases and then record how they died, and then of course after the war why some of them survived. But of course the government denies this ever took place, and these people have tried to get compensation for what happened, and of course it was never admitted that it occurred. And Colonel Ishii, of course, gave all of his records to the Americans and was given immunity from prosecution for killing so many of the American servicemen. And that fact, I mentioned that in my latest newsletter and the documentation on it, but you will never see that mentioned any place any more than you'll see mentioned of Operation Keelhaul, where we sent 6 million Russians back to Russia to be killed at the end of the Second World War. Everybody knows about Holocaust, but nobody knows about Operation Keelhaul, or the 44 million Chinese who were starved to death in 1961 and 1962. How could you keep the murder of 44.5 million Chinese a secret from the American people? Why, of course, you control the media, and ultimately you control what the American people believe. And that's covering a book called, I believe it's called either The Great Hunger or Hungry Ghost. I'm not sure, but we actually have the book.
You know, as you begin to turn over all these different leaves of history, and you see the relationship and the interrelationship between them, but then also the occult thread that runs through each and every one of these events, we're not talking about people that were so obsessed with the natural. What becomes obvious is that these people were possessed in many cases by the supernatural.
Amen. I mean, the only way you can understand this mass genocide and then its cover-up is, of course, to realize these spiritual forces that have concealed the truth from the good-hearted people who might be offended to realize what we're really up against.
Right. You know, may I read one really important quote? I think this will help people understand, kind of encapsulate what we're talking about. We're talking about the word transhumanism. In other words, something that goes across humanity, actually does away with humanity. And it's kind of interesting, and I'm quoting a guy by the name of Nick Bostrom, Bostrom. He said this, and this is really an important quote, "Transhumanism is a loosely defined movement that has developed gradually over the past two decades. Attention is given to both present technology, like genetic engineering and information technology, and anticipated future technologies, such as molecular nanotechnology and artificial intelligence. The enhancement options that are being discussed include radical extension of the human health span, eradication of disease, elimination of unnecessary suffering, and augmentation of human intellectual, physical, and emotional capacities. Transhumanists hope we shall eventually manage to become post-humans beings with vastly greater capacities than present humans. Now that's a scary mouthful. That's a scary paragraph. Because what they're saying is that God made a mistake when he made humanity. And by their brilliance, their technology, and their science, they're going to be able to radically alter the human health span. Now they're doing that with what's called the Methuselah gene. As you probably know, Dr. Stan, when they were discovering, actually working on the Human Genome Project, they came up with some, if you will, what they called, I love this word because they were calling it genetic waste. The genetic waste turned out to be telomeres, which are responsible for longevity. So the very stuff that the original scientists were calling junk turned out to be the Methuselah gene. And the Methuselah gene, if we go into the Old Testament, Methuselah lived to be 969 years old, and longevity is a recorded fact. It isn't somebody just, you know, writing on cave paintings and trying to count sticks. And so what this Nick Bostrom is stating is that that transhumanists hope that they'll eventually manage to become post-humans, beings with vastly greater capacities than present humans. Now, what that infers is, and this is a word that I coined a number of years ago, I call it techno-feudalism, where you will have the people who have more strength, longevity, supernatural brilliance, the ability to become gods with a little g, and then normal humans are raised almost like lab rats to be the serfs of the new techno kings. And this is a very scary thing, and unfortunately, as I documented in my book, and I say unfortunately, there are people that are so far out there that they absolutely believe that they will make such superior beings that no one will want to stay in their quote-unquote present form.
And of course, we scoff at the idea, and yet the Nazis wanted to breed a super race, Aryan, blonde hair, blue-eyed, and they, you know, and only, of course, the fit would survive. And of course, that was, of course, 60 years ago. Where are we today? Why, of course, we're far beyond that point today. We actually have the technology to clone human beings. We've already cloned sheep and other animals and cows, and we can begin to clone human beings. And of course, I'm sure that other countries are actually working on these things today. And once you can clone them, you can change their genetic makeup. Well, Steve, you have a place in here. You begin talking about UFOs. Now, in your estimation, are UFOs real? And if they are, what are they? Now, because, of course, there's some people say that they're critters from outer space. Other people say that they are something that was developed by the Nazis. And other people say that they're demonic manifestations. What is your take on that?
Well, I believe that the demonic influences the physical realm, and I believe the technology that was given to the Nazis through their development and involvement in the occult result in this. But I also want to share something. I believe that, first of all, that the whole phenomenon known as alien phenomenon, it's fascinating to me that the sexual aspect of abductions and the manipulation of the female and the reproductive tract in female, the whole thing seems to be centered around almost like an occult fascination with sacrifice. You know, interestingly enough, a lot of mainstream scientists who were not Christians, when they tried to develop their thesis on the UFO phenomenon, came to the conclusion that this is not just a physical phenomenon, this is a supernatural phenomenon that manifests itself in the physical realm.
And I think that's really so fascinating that non-Christians, Jacques Vallée, who was certainly one of the world's most well-known, of course, experts on the UFOs, came to that conclusion that this was metaphysical. In other words, there's no way this could be physical, and he didn't even believe in a God. And we have a book called Beyond Top Secret, written by the former head of the British Air Force, and saying, you know, the only explanation for this is it's metaphysical. So you have to understand, see, they don't want us to believe this sort of thing is real, but there really is a demonic realm out there. There is a supernatural. There is a God. There is a Satan. And there is the eternal war between the two sides. But the demonic manifestations are here. They're real. They're not imaginary. So do you feel that many or most of the UFOs are demonic manifestations?
Oh, absolutely. And when in the Word of God, the Holy Bible, even Paul talks about the principalities and powers of the air. We're talking about a phenomenon that goes into ancient history. We're talking about UFOs being pictured in everything from Renaissance paintings in the 15th, 16th century to the whole Australian outback having what are called the Wajinga drawings with a large being with a glass bubble head and flying saucer in the background. They're claiming those things are like 4,000 years old. Now, when Whitley Strieber wrote his book Communion, and obviously he's a non-Christian, when he talks about the terror that he underwent at the hands of these entities, he absolutely used a word that he's apologizing to his reader, yet there's no other word he could use. He was talking about it was if he were in a world of demons. And everyone that wants to deny the Bible, it's fascinating that they have to come back to it. Even modern newspaper editors can no longer explain the events that we're currently experiencing on a worldwide basis without using words such as Armageddon, end of the world, biblical proportion. Have you noticed that, Dr. Stan?
Yeah.
They who have done their best to destroy or seemingly try to attack the validity of the Word of God now find themselves locked in a time period with supernatural events or events beyond their understanding taking place, and they have to ultimately turn to that. But getting back to the demon issue, we're told that Satan himself can manifest as an angel of light. An angel simply means messenger. And we also know that just from the standpoint of the spiritual, being able to manifest in the physical, i.e. the angels that came to warn Abraham of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the ones that led Lot and his family out, I mean, they had physicality. So I think what people have got to understand is I find it really hard to believe that space brethren, or as Zachariah Sitchin and others claim, the Anunnaki came and created us. It's fascinating that with that type of intelligence and that distance to travel in the universe, they want to come here and mess around with human beings sexually. And it's fascinating to me that this desire to be in a body, see, I believe that's the driving force behind this. We know that when demons are cast out, and by the way, demons are recognized in every civilization in the world, and I'm talking non-Western civilization. They've never heard of God, they've never heard of Jesus, but they know good spirits and evil spirits. And the way the people, whether you're dealing with the jungles of Borneo or Ecuador, you're talking about people that know that there are evil spirits and good spirits. So the unseen influencing the seen is a very almost impregnated. It's a memory and it's a current reality to these people that they experience. And so when you're trying to explain the UFO phenomenon apart from the supernatural, I think it falls flat on its face.
Well, of course, you know, if you really begin looking into this and you try to understand how 3,000 or 4,000 years ago they could have built the Stonehenge, the Druid monument in England, well, of course, they were relying upon supernatural forces and the exact astronomical or astrological alignment of that. I mean, how were they able to build the Great Pyramid exactly positioned north, south, east, and west, and the Great Pyramids of South America? And, of course, these are all basically occult monuments. When you understand that these people were tapping into these supernatural forces, then, of course, you can begin to understand so much more of what's going on today. But, of course, nobody wants to talk about that. We want to talk about, maybe they piled up the sand or maybe they used levers. And no, these people had tapped into these dark forces. They've always been here. And, of course, there's always been that battle between the forces of God and the forces of darkness. And once we understand that, then, of course, we can begin really to see so much of what's going on today. Let me just read something quickly. We're almost out of time for this hour, and, of course, Steve is going to be with us the next hour, but you have to, if you try to understand what happened in Hitler's Germany, why it really doesn't make sense. Unless, of course, you understand it is a manifestation of something that is really beyond our normal comprehension. And, of course, a man, his name was Elie Wiesel, And Elie Wiesel, of course, lived through the Holocaust, and his family was largely killed there. And I was just looking for the quotation I have from him. And he wrote this: "There was then a technique, a science of murder, complete with specialized laboratories, business meetings, and progress charts. Those engaged in its practice didn't belong to the gutter society of misfits, nor could they be dismissed as just a collection of rabble. Many held degrees in philosophy, in sociology and biology and general medicine, in psychiatry and in the fine arts. There were lawyers among them, and unthinkable but true, theologians. And what we are aligned against is organized evil. When you understand that, then you can begin to understand what really happened at the time of the Holocaust, and of course, what of course faces up, in my estimation, today. Well, Steve, do you have a parting thought for our listeners in the Great Northwest? You're going to be leaving us here in just a few minutes.
This is such a critical issue because it not only defines the present technology, it shows you where it's headed. When you understand where this genetic engineering, nanotechnology, microbiotics, the surveillance society, the supermen and superwomen that are, quote, on the drawing boards in the test tubes, what I've done in writing Genetic Armageddon is equip with the quotes, with the scientists. In other words, this isn't me just running off at the mouth. I have put into print what these people have planned, what their successes are, what they're looking for, and it's a very, very dark future. But praise God, there is a living God. He has redeemed us for those who will receive His Son. And I got to tell you something. I'm not ashamed of the gospel or the good news, because what I presented, and I believe, Stan, this is the end of all of Satan's desire, is to destroy the last man, woman, and child who were created in God's image. Like the woman who gets mad at her boyfriend and tears up the photograph, or vice versa, this is simply Satan's technological tearing up of the image of man as created by the living God who loves His creation.
Well, can you give us that telephone number where people can get your book again?
Sure. It's 1-800-424-7870. 1-800-424-7870.
All right, fine. So we're going to have to say goodnight to our listeners up in the Spokane area. And, of course, I just certainly want to ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, because we're involved in a spiritual battle. And lastly, I ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you again, Dr. Stan saying goodnight, and may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But Please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us tonight Steve Quayle. We're talking about his book, Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters. And we've had a fascinating first hour, and we're going to be getting, of course, into all sorts of things. The second hour, we will accept your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly one of the things, Steve, you talk about on pages 130, 131, 132, the good ship Lollipop. And you talk about all of these cruise liners that there's suddenly all these people are getting sick. Now, it could happen once, it could happen twice, but time and time and time again. And the question came to my mind, you know, if they were wanted to experiment with bugs, with organisms, what better place to do it than on a cruise ship? Because then you would be able to control it. It wouldn't get loose in the general population. And you could, of course, take care of it. You can control it there, but you could see the impact on the people. And obviously, that idea came to you as well, didn't it?
Yeah, because you basically have a test tube at sea. You know, you have a controlled environment, you have a very broad group of people. Usually on most cruise ships, you have everything from children to the elderly, or let's say the older generation. And what was interesting to me is that, as you remember, the stories that were coming through and coming out on this is that it was like one cruise ship right after another. And I believe that, obviously, if you understand, and I understand, that these genetic engineering devils are not beyond wiping out whole tribes in Africa or whole cruise ships, it puts it into perspective. You've got a group that is absolutely at least separate, so if something breaks out that goes beyond your design parameters, you simply only have to deal with a ship. And I don't even think the cruise ship passengers understood the ramifications. Also, I believe there were specific acts of terrorism put into place to test out so many of these germs. You know, one of the things your listeners need to understand is that during the former breakup of the former Soviet Union, so many of the scientists got away with test tubes full of stuff. And the stuff I would define as some of the most dangerous, virulent, and experimental pathogens that had ever been developed. When you've got guys like Ken Allebeck, who defected the United States, and you have all of the different biological and chemical weapon engineers who defected, they tell stories that were absolutely hair-raising. And you know what's fascinating, Dr. Stan? They go before Congress, they go before Senate, and they tell them all these things, and you've got, I believe, honestly, you have automatons, meaning almost like mental robots that didn't even begin to grasp the brevity of the situation of which they were talking about. Remember the smallpox scare? They were talking about, you know, the emergency inoculation and blah, blah, blah. And yet they forgot that, according to Allebeck's testimony, there were 62 different strains of smallpox, and the biologically engineered and weaponized forms took into account the previous immunity. So what I'm so sick of, and I got to be candid in how I say this, careful and candid, is that we've got an attitude of incredible stupidity, but we also have that stupidity coupled with some supernatural depraved genius. It almost sounds like an oxymoron. We've got the puppet masters who are the geniuses in the background, who are absolutely Rosemary's babies growing up. And then we've got the willing stooges, if you will, unable to grasp the ramifications of that which has been presented to them. So when it came to this whole area of even being able to understand the serious nature of terrorists with biological and chemical weapons, they just blew it off. When I wrote my first book years ago, and you had me on your show several times, when I wrote Breathe No Evil, no mainstream publisher would deal with it. I had to publish it myself because they told me it was irrelevant. Well, I can tell you this, it's not irrelevant anymore, especially they who snickered and, let's say, sarcastically did the typical denial and ad hominem attacks on anybody that would make those statements. Now they've got not only egg on their face, but they may have, you know, something else coursing through their veins in a matter of time.
Well, I think you have here on page 131 of your book, you begin listing the outbreaks. March 2nd, 2002, nearly 250 passengers and crew on board a P&O cruise ship become ill from the Norwalk virus. On April 2002, Holland American Line, apparent outbreak of Norwalk fever. June 1st, 2002, the Ocean Princess of the Princess Cruises has an outbreak of Norwalk sickness, 40 passengers, 12 crew members. June 8th, the Ocean Princess suffers another outbreak, 88 passengers, 39 crewmen. Then July 25th, and this is, there's two pages here, there are about 30 different, maybe even 40 different references to these various cruise ships that each one has these outbreaks of sometimes the same, but sometimes entirely different organisms. Many of these, however, are the Norwalk virus, and some of them are not Norwalk virus. In other words, why would they suddenly occur? You mean to tell me they can't clear these things out of the cruise ships, or is this simply another one of their macabre experiments? And if you don't think that they'll experiment on human beings, you need to know what they did, of course, at certainly at the Huntsville prison in Texas, where they released mycoplasma and let the epidemic out into the general population, and what they've done at other prisons. In fact, all of this is in my latest newsletter, experimenting on the various prisoners there. You're not hearing what they're doing. You're not hearing about these experiments. You're not hearing that they experimented on hundreds of thousands of Americans during the 1950s and 1960s without their knowledge or consent. And many of them died as a result of those experiments. And if you haven't got my latest newsletters, you need to get them. You need to get my latest newsletter. We'll be glad to send that to you. And then, of course, you need to get Steve's book, because what he has been doing and what I've been researching overlapped tremendously. And we haven't even talked about this. I had no idea what he was doing until I read his book. And it's a fascinating, fascinating book. And, of course, so much of this gets into this recombinant DNA therapy. Why don't you, can you sort of explain what they're talking about, recombinant DNA technology?
Sure. The word recombinant is really simple. It just means recombining. You know, it means taking certain aspects of the human genome, of the genetic code to human life, and attenuating it, articulating it, and combining it. So when they come up with, let's say, a specific RNA type virus, recombinant ribonucleic acid in a recombinant form, they can absolutely, it's almost like you can change the clothes of whatever underlying virus. And I want to address something because I think it's important. When they were, all those cruise ships were coming under the infection, many times did you notice, Dr. Stan, they use the word Norwalk-like virus? Right. Every time I would hear SARS-like, Norwalk-like, I would always say that's a direct admission they don't know what they're up against, okay? And it's fascinating because if you look at the standard influenza strains, you know, it's pretty easy for them to say this is type this is type A, B, you know, standard influenza, blah, blah, blah. When they're dealing with the unknown, it was incredible to me that both the CDC and the World Health Organization would always use the word like, because that's not very definitive. That's not very, to say, you said, you know, did he die from suicide or did he not? Well, is it cancer or cancer-like? So whenever I would see that, that would be my tip-off to go into more background investigation. And again, I maintain that many of the bugs that were on those cruise ships were experimental. The reason they could not type them is because they were developed in a laboratory, released on a ship for the very reasons you brought up, and the same thing with SARS. You know, Dr. Patricia Doyle tracked the outbreak of SARS initially to Guangdong, China, and a biological university, and you know how long it takes in the typical medical profession to be able to develop a vaccine. It can take years. Well, when the SARS reached its highest infectious rate, all of a sudden the Chinese say that they're going to have a vaccine in 2 weeks. Well, you could not have a vaccine in 2 weeks for a a complicated virus such as that unless you had developed it when you were developing the weapon.
Well, of course, the gentleman who was a Chinese, the gentleman where it all started was actually a professor at a Chinese university, and he's working on a vaccine for some sort of a disease that affected animals. And, of course, then he develops this disease himself, and he is the one who spreads it at the hotel, and he's one of the first victims. But, obviously, if they had a vaccine that soon, it was probably the vaccine he was working on.
Well, the vaccine that he was working on was absolutely, that was a cover story. What they were working on was a biological weapon, and I got to tell you this, the source on this is, in my opinion, impeccable and unimpeachable. And this came from China, okay? This came from a medical doctor in China. And I can't say any more than that because I don't want anybody getting hurt. But the point that...
You mean you want him suicided?
Yes. The thing that people have got to understand is that for this thing to have been as unique as it was, when I understood immediately when they said they could only identify 78% of the genome, and they said it was a paramyxovirus, but
no, it was a coronavirus. It was
a coronavirus,
entirely new type of coronavirus.
Right, but then they said, Dr. Stan, I'm not trying to correct you, but then they said it was a paramyxovirus. Okay, then they said it was a combination of both, and then they said that it was an ortho. A form of orthomyxovirus, and the point that I'm trying to say is they didn't know what they were up against. They could say it was like a coronavirus, but then there was, you know, a majority of it, or excuse me, not a majority, but a major portion of the genome that was not what they said it was.
It was an entirely different type than the regular, the three types of coronavirus, and this is, they put it in, you know, they can call it what they want to, but it is not a typical coronavirus. You're
right.
Absolutely right.
And so that was my tip off. And then when I would hear statements coming from the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control that were almost contradictory, it was like they were trying to cover their tracks and not tell. See, my chief complaint is, and I'm sure it's yours, the word national security is nothing more than the conditioning of we lemmings for the slaughter. It has nothing to do with national security. It has everything to do with insecurity and control. But that's another story and another topic.
All right. So basically, of course, what you're suggesting is that SARS was a genetically engineered virus. And I think it is. I've got from people of excellent scientists who really believe that it is a genetically engineered virus. But most of what we have, I mean, Ebola is an entirely new disease. Laser fever is an entirely new disease. The dengue's been around since the 1920s or 30s, but in the mid-1950s comes dengue hemorrhagic fever, a lethal form of the disease, an entirely new disease. And then even some of the other diseases we have here, like Hanta, never appeared in the United States until suddenly it appears in the Midwest in a tribe of American Indians, isolated so that it can't spread in the general community. And then, of course, people in government don't have much use for American Indians anyway. And, of course, you have to realize, as you begin seeing all these outbreaks, the fascinating is West Nile virus outbreak. Of course, West Nile has been came from Uganda. But first cases were in New York City, in our continent, in 1999. An article 3 months later in New Yorker magazine says the CIA thinks Saddam Hussein brought it here. And, of course, it's written by a man named Richard Preston, who gets his information from the CIA. Why would the CIA put out a story like that, that they thought Saddam Hussein brought West Nile virus? A report this last week that, of course, 2 weeks ago, none of the mosquitoes in New Jersey contained West Nile virus. Last week, all of the mosquitoes in New Jersey that were captured contained West Nile virus. How would you go from none to all of them infected within a week's time? There's something very strange about what's going on today.
There is very strange. And let me share this, though. This might give you a little background and answer your question. I talked to a couple of Cuban scientists who had fled Castro's Cuba, who actually one of them was in prison. He told me that he was present and during the Cold War, the Russians had a major biologic weapons development base on the island of Cuba. When the Russians left, interestingly enough, the Chinese came in, but this one scientist told me, he said, we would have the Iraqis coming in almost daily, and he said, I can tell you, Steve, we had bird cages for as far as your eye could see with infected birds. And we would take them out on boats, and we would take them into the different cities, and he said we, meaning the Cubans, and release them. Now, you know how you can tell when there's maybe feet to a story is that was radically denounced by the Cubans. But what's interesting is that one of the premier scientists who was captured, Dr. Taha, T-A-H-A, they called her Dr. Germ, in Iraq, she developed a program by which the rats in New York City would be infected with the bubonic plague. In other words, fleas would be released, and the rat population, which is out of control in New York City, that would release the plague throughout the city. Well, they decided that would be too obvious, so that's when, according to the Cuban scientists, and according to others, even other defectors from not only the Mideast, Dr. Stam, but from the former Eastern Bloc nations, talked about working on the West Nile virus and how it was released by infected birds. Now, some people say, well, I don't believe that. But the point is when you're seeing anomalies, when you go from a baseline of absolutely no activity, i.e. no mosquitoes infected, and all of a sudden everything is infected, you've got to know that someone has introduced that infected, if you would, vector almost in the last period of time since its previous non-existence to now its present existence.
Because these things are going on. I've heard the same story from Cubans as well, that the West Nile virus, they were working there. The most amazing thing is, Steve, I mean, here we've got a major chemical and a biological warfare laboratories 90 miles off the Florida Keys, and we go halfway around the world to attack Iraq, which doesn't at least have any major weapons of mass destruction. Now, I'm sure they had them. I'm sure they sent them to Syria. But then when we got there, they were not a threat to the United States. So the question is, why aren't we concerned about what's going on in Cuba, where there's a very good chance that this is where the West Nile virus was released? Because these birds fly north and south. But then, of course, how are they getting over into Colorado? Is somebody transporting the mosquitoes? And, of course, what we ought to be doing is spraying with DDT, but we're not allowed to do that because, of course, well, because they outlawed DDT. And yet it is safest of all pesticides. So rather than using a safe pesticide, they use a very lethal pesticide, it really has a profound impact on human beings, whereas, of course, there's no evidence that the DDT had any effect on human beings. So,
well, to answer your question, the release of the birds specifically was coming through Mexico and coming on the interstates. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that we've done nothing about our borders, either our Canadian border or our Mexican border, and it's basically a revolving door for not only terrorists, but for whatever plot or whatever vectors they want to unleash on this country.
And, Christian, yet we're told we're fighting terrorism, and, of course, we've got to take away the freedom of the American people because of the terrorist threat.
Well, I got to tell everyone, the major terrorist threat is from the legislation because, again, all you have to say is, where is Saddam? Where is Osama? And one of the things I do on my website, Dr. Stan, this is new as of yesterday, is I've got a terror threat matrix. And a terror threat matrix is, I've been very critical of the government's terrorist warning, and I think rightly so, because number one, it's innocuous. Number two, there's no time. They don't tell the source. They don't tell the geographical nature of the threat. And on my matrix, I do all that, and we do it by a color code. We tell you where the threats are coming from, i.e. if they're the Internet, the secret jihad websites, or if it's a military source. And I think people would like to look at that. And as of today, and I just want to bring this up because we're talking about terrorism now in relationship to the whole night, the interesting posting that's on the website. And by the way, when I get something, I post up the backup documentation so people can read it for themselves. But their posting right now is simply they, meaning the terrorists, are posting openly that they're going to have an attack on the U.S. economy. And they're telling all of their brother terrorists to get out of the American dollars and stuff. Now, these come off of secret websites. These are not bulletin boards that you and I could go on. These are bulletin boards and forms of communication that you've got to know what you're doing to get into them, etc. So, and I don't, but I know the people who do give me the information. And my goal is to give people enough definitive notice that with an advance warning, hopefully, I can keep them to the best of my ability by the grace of God out of harm's way and keep them as safe and informed as possible. It's what you do, and you do it so well. You give people a history of what has gone on in the past to bring them to the present and to show where it's going to lead. And I can tell you this, I believe that the Attorney General of the United States has got to be stopped in the Patriot Act too. There is nothing that's going to work on the terrorists. May I share an anecdotal story with you? It was kind of funny. I was doing a talk show in Buffalo, New York one day before the Lackawanna Six were arrested, and someone called in and said, you know, I was a fool, I didn't know what I was talking about. I said, you guys have Al-Qaeda in your backyard right now. And within 3 hours after that statement, they arrested the Al-Qaeda Lackawanna Six. So what I'm saying is that all that they would have to do is obviously put in effective border control, meaning they, the federal government, and also round up and arrest the ones they know of. I can tell you this, right now, the number one concern with the FBI is sensitivity training, not tracking terrorists. And I mean sensitivity training so they don't offend, the Muslim community.
Well, I think, one only has to look at the fact that they're not trying to control our borders, that the government administration is doing everything they can to block the arming of airline pilots. They've only turned out at the most 100 to 150 pilots who are licensed to carry weapons out of the 10,000 or more pilots that are flying commercial airlines. And they know very well, of course, that, if they're really a threat, that the main stay would be armed pilots there. They know very well that what they've done to the doors, separating the cockpit, does not work. You can take simply one of their little trays that they have the food on. You can run it right through those walls. They're taking the armed marshals off the planes. Now, if they're really concerned about the terrorists hijacking our planes, why are they doing everything they can to block the arming of the pilots? Why are they taking the armed marshals off of our planes? Why don't they really get safe doors instead of the flimsy doors with this little lock that they have on it, which really is not going to hold up at all? And you can go right down the line of all the things that they're not doing if there was really a terrorist threat here in the United States. So obviously they're not concerned about the threat of Islamic terrorism. They are concerned about controlling the American people. And anybody doesn't think that they knew exactly who the terrorists were on September 11th. All you need to do is read Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the combined Senate House Committee. It's in my October newsletter. And there Kristen Breitweiser is saying, quoting the New York Times, within 2 hours of the attack on September 11th, the FBI was at the restaurants where the terrorists ate, at the neighborhoods where they lived, certainly at the flight schools where they trained. How could they do that within 2 hours if they had no idea who these people were or there was going to be an attack?
Well, obviously they knew, and obviously they didn't do anything. And I got to go one step beyond even what you're suggesting. I'm suggesting, and I know you've talked about this for so many years, that the whole way the New World Order plans to come on the scene is to basically destroy every last vestige of the old world order. Obviously, it's the phoenix rising from its own ashes. But what's interesting in the world of terrorism, terrorism is always state-sponsored or government-funded. I don't care what you say, somebody's got to pay these guys to go out and do what they do. And, with all of the money that's being transferred around, and, we are vulnerable as a nation. I believe there truly are terrorists, but the point is to inflict enough pain on the citizens of the United States so we cry out for protection. And it's the Hegelian dialectic. They have created the problem. They have provided the solution. And in providing the solution, that word, that wonderful word called freedom, and the other wonderful word called the fear of the Lord are going to be taken away. And for people that don't understand the nature of that, even now, Dr. Stan, I'm sure you've seen the photographs of what's going on in, Gadsden, Alabama, where the point is the Ten Commandments, the Christians who have gathered around peacefully are being hauled off to jail, and some are being clubbed, etc. Well, the time for America's meeting the living God, in my opinion, is at hand. You know, Scripture says if the, you know, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is reproach to the people. And we now have the most bizarre country, I think, in the world from the standpoint of what we embrace, what we renounce, and where we're headed. And I think it's really important for people to understand that there are ramifications to our actions. And I see, obviously, the fit that people are having over Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, about the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus Christ. I see the contempt that the ACLU just basically, like dragons, they're fire-breathing out their nose. And I see the inane, well, the Constitution says that it's, you know, separate the church and state. They don't have a clue. They just absolutely have no clue. So what I believe we're being we're headed, being driven to the slaughter. And that's what it will be, a slaughter, if the people who know what's going on don't raise their voices and pray like they've never prayed and intercede like they've never interceded before.
Well, of course, somebody sent me a little thing the other day, quoting John Quincy Adams, saying that duty is ours, the results are the Lord's. And you and I are to do our best, and you are certainly on the radio of following me. I'm actually overlapping 1 hour on Genesis, which is fine, because the more people we can reach, the better it'll be. So we're not competitors. We're certainly striving to get the word out. I'm a little curious. Tell me a little bit more about this information that's being put out by the terrorists, telling their friends to get their money out of the U.S. dollar. Where did this come from?
It comes from a closed website. A closed means that the average person can't get to it. You have to know, a lot of computer savvy to get in there. I also have to speak Arabic. I don't. The person who does provide the information does. And it's kind of interesting because people have got to understand Al-Qaeda and the entire world, the New World Order has to destroy the United States. So the global puppet masters, whether they use Al-Qaeda or renegade, former Eastern Bloc agents, or they're using this disenfranchised group or that disenfranchised group, they want to destroy and are doing so quite effectively, in my opinion. But the information comes from one of those chat rooms and comes from a bulletin board and a notification system. And the specific threat is that they were told to take their money, get it out, and this is on my website so they can read the actual document, and it's under, you know, it's a front page, you can't miss it, you just click on Terror Alert Update, it'll take you to all the backup documentation. But the point is that they're telling their people around the world, now not just in the United States, around the world, that the big event is only days away from crashing the economy. Is it real? Is it false? I don't know. All I can tell you is it's specific, I can tell you the source, and I can tell you it's right in line with the very reason I believe we're in Iraq. Even more so than the oil was the fact that Saddam Hussein, prior to us going into Iraq, 18 months prior to that, shifted from paying for or accepting U.S. dollars in payment for Iraqi oil. He went to the euro. When the euro rose against the dollar, going up from about 88 cents to as high as $1.19, he made himself, you know, a couple billion dollars just on the currency exchange and conversion. Now we've got Iran that's a hot spot. We've got the outbreak of more violence, and it just goes on and on and on. We've got, within Venezuela right now, we have Chavez, who is the kissing communist brother of Fidel. I'm not saying literal brother, but philosophical brother. And he's put in, Stan, a bio laboratory to produce weapons, and they're planning on coming at the United States from Venezuela.
We're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes, just a moment with Steve Quayle. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Steve Quayle, and of course we've been talking about lots of things, but the major thing we were talking about, of course, is his very excellent book entitled Genetic Armageddon, Today's technology, tomorrow's monsters, and really the fact that the scientists and the government behind them are doing everything they can to be able to change the genetic structure of mankind. They're really trying to create superhuman beings, super warriors, and of course, fabulous amounts of money is available for this type of research, and of course it already started with the Special Virus Cancer Project now back in about the early 1950s, and that project didn't begin until about 1962, but they began hiring scientists in the early 1950s, and of course they've kept them on their payroll ever since then. And these are men, most of them, who have no moral compass, who don't consider right or wrong. It's all, well, let's see what we can do. Let's make a new disease. Let's see how it'll ravish the immune system. And that's exactly what they did. They created new diseases that ravish the immune system, and those are called AIDS. And of course, the other new diseases, Ebola never existed before. Laser fever never existed before. Lyme disease didn't exist until 1969. And you go down the list of all the new diseases we have. When I went to medical school, we had hepatitis A and hepatitis B. Now we have hepatitis C and E and F and G and H. All these new forms of hepatitis, and 150 million cases of hepatitis C throughout the world. How did they get there? Why, most of them came from vaccinations with dirty needles. China alone has 700 million people with hepatitis B. How did they get it? Why, they got it from vaccination, with most of them with dirty needles. You couldn't have such a failed health policy unintentionally, because we're dealing with evil people. And there is a belief on the part of many of these people that there's just too many folks in the world, and wouldn't it be far better off if an awful lot of them were dead. And people say that really couldn't be true. Nobody could feel that way. But of course, we're dealing with people who have a different worldview. They march to a different drumbeat. They dream a different dream. And until we can understand that, and that these people are motivated by evil, then it all begins to make sense. And I'm sure you've come to the same conclusion, haven't you, Steve?
Absolutely. And again, I'm telling the most, when human beings try and understand someone that has no soul, or what I call a transmorphic demonic entity, in other words, the Gadarene demoniac's little brother, I think the thing that's tough for Americans, Dr. Stan, is to come to the intellectual understanding that there are truly, truly evil, use the word possessed if you want, control people out there that absolutely have nothing but contempt for humanity. You're a physician. You spend a great portion of your life trying to help actually helping people. But there are people that live totally for the destruction of humanity. And I want to go further than this, that most people cannot even begin to put into a conscious concept that there are people that want to rid the planet of 5.5 billion people. Now, again, understand the devil's very suave and very ingenious in this way. He knows that humans fear death. Most humans fear death. Jesus said not to fear it. He said, but don't fear, him who can kill your body. Fear him who can send you into everlasting hell, meaning God the Father. But humans cannot believe that they're up against, number one, unseen forces, and number two, people who have absolutely sworn an oath to Lucifer, to Satan himself, to absolutely do everything in their power with the great wealth they've been given by him, I might add, to absolutely destroy humanity. And that's what's unfathomable for most people to even begin to embrace.
Well, you know, Chris, you can sometimes read something like that in fiction form, and it almost seems believable. It's when you try to transpose that from the fiction to the factual. And for our listeners out there, I always like to suggest they get hold of a book by Tom Clancy, wonderful adventure stories called Rainbow Six. And, of course, in the beginning of the book, Tom Clancy says, this book is based upon real facts, and there's information here your government doesn't want you to know about. And it's about the plan to create a plague that will kill off literally all of the world's population, with the exception of just a very, very small number of people. And, of course, as the plague begins and people, of course, are frightened to death, everybody wants to be vaccinated. And what do you think's in the vaccine? Why, of course, the lethal product. It's an amazing, amazing story, and of course it's not as far-fetched as you might imagine, knowing what we know and what Steve knows about what's going on today. And when you read, of course, and we have, for any of the people who are out there skeptical, copies of the UNESCO Courier from November of 1991, where Jacques Cousteau, that great humanitarian, talks about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day to try to save humanity. Eliminate 350,000 people a day to get the earth back into balance. And of course, that is totally blacked out by every major means of communication. You have to understand that there are people who know what's going on. They just don't want the public to realize what is lying in store for them. And then, of course, behind that, of course, are the spiritual forces, and I believe that God is going to bring terrible punishment on America, because, of course, those who so much is given, so much is required or expected, and I think America has been tried and tragically has been found wanting.
Well, I got to share something. Never in my life, I've been at this now, I'm only 52, but I've been at writing, investigating, writing newsletters, etc., for 30 years, so that's a major portion of my life. I have never had, Dr. Stan, I'm not saying this to be melodramatic, but I said it earlier today on my radio program, I have never had such a sense of foreboding in the entire years I've been on radio and in everything I've done. I've interviewed people that were involved in smuggling of weapons of mass destruction. I've talked to them on the phone. I've, met with some of them, don't know their names. They don't give me their names. They just show up at my office sometimes. And the deal is that all that stuff, you know, was there. It really happened, and I was aware of it. But never have I had the sense of impending judgment like I do today. In other words, you know, this whole issue with the Ten Commandments, it's just like the psalm where the psalmist is quoting, we will not have this man Jesus to rule over us. And, you know, what's interesting is that we won't accept God's grace. We won't repent. And everyone quotes 2 Chronicles, you know, 7:14, where if God's people will humble themselves, pray, seek his face, and turn from their wicked ways, then will he hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land. But it's like there's an attitude that's permeated even the church in America, and primarily the church in America, that, hey, we're so good, God would never do that. But the issue that people forget is that God judges nations in history. We have history is littered with the carcasses of great nations that embrace the very form of aberrant and abhorrent lifestyles that we're embracing. There are instances now where pastors can't speak out against sodomy or anything for fear of losing their churches. In Canada, it's a hate crime. The Ten Commandments are no longer fit for the courtroom. All you have is relativistic and humanistic justice, and there is no justice in the heart of man outside of God placing it there. So I've got to say something, and I'm saying it on your show. This is the second place I've said it. I have never in my life had the sense of foreboding that I have that God is going to get America's attention. And the next time the events happen, and look, the hearts of the kings are like rivers of water in the hand of the living God, and he channels them. But God uses wicked people to judge wicked people. He uses righteous people to bless righteous people. And the scripture says, if the foundations be destroyed, what will the righteous do, and how can the righteous stand? And what people are not recognizing, Americans, is the very foundation of this great nation of ours that was built on the concept of honoring the living God of heaven, is absolutely now out the window. There's nothing but contempt for the Lord Jesus Christ. There's nothing but rebellion towards the living God. And it's like Britain. Britain has said that within 2 years, there'll be no Christians left alive. I don't believe that, because God will always have a remnant. But look at the judgment that the very continent of Europe is under. France was the first one to state they wanted no mention of God in the new EU constitution for the European Union. Today now they're claiming 15,000. It used to be 4, then it went to 10. Now it's 15,000 people have died from the extreme heat that's in France. That is a world class. I wouldn't call it a plague, but it is a world class event.
And of course, you know, the people would go to the hospital and they were just so overcrowded with people dying as the temperature got to 104 degrees. This is really rather frightening. The people just totally unprepared for it. And of course, people said it could never happen here in America. And I would simply ask, why not? I mean, God, certainly we've repudiated God. Why should we think God won't do to America what he did to the children of Israel, the people he loved? And of course, he brought the Assyrians down, the wicked and terrible Assyrians, to slaughter them and carry them off into slavery. And then, of course, for the remnant that were in the south, why, he brought in the Babylonians. And he uses other nations, of course, to wreak havoc on those who've turned against him. And, of course, that's how, and probably the only way, he's going to get the attention of the church in America, which has become so complacent and really has begun to preach it. Entirely new gospel, and that gospel doesn't include anything about the wrath of God or fear of God or God's vengeance against nations. But it's been said that, you know, as God can judge people in the afterlife, of course nations don't go into an afterlife, so he judges nations in this life, and certainly the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. And I share your concern, Steve. I've been at this for 42 years, so I've got a few years on you, but of course I really believe that we're in for very, very difficult times. And the fact that the average Christian is supporting what's going on over in Iraq, they're not concerned that they lied to us about the weapons of mass destruction. They're not concerned that a couple of Americans are dying there every day. They're just hoping the price of gasoline is going to come down one of these days.
And it's not, Dr. Stan. With the power outage that took place last week, and I want to share something on, I had received from the same source that I posted the terrorist alert that he said something was going to happen in 2 days. They didn't know what, but it was going to be big. There are people that believe it may have been a geomagnetic storm. There are people that believe it may have been lightning or a pulse beam weapon or the terrorists or whatever. But I can only tell you this, that right now there are 8 refineries down, both in the United States and Canada, 4 in each. And the price of gasoline, I monitor that. That's one of the things I pay attention to. In California, I think the highest I've seen so far is $2.39. But in Phoenix, where the governor, Napolitano, is talking about rationing gas, they're up to $4.97 in some places.
But
$4.97.
What people don't really understand is, of course, that this makes tremendous profits for the oil companies. But not only that, this is their real goal. Their real goal, if you go back to the biodiversity treaty and the global biodiversity assessment, they want an excuse to get the price of gasoline up so high that the American people won't use it. And that way, if they can punish them for having SVUs, SUVs, and of course, they really want to get the American people out of their cars. But how would you ever do that? The American people would rise up in their righteous indignation. Well, gee, it's not our folks' fault. You know, those refineries are out, and it's Saddam Hussein, and they're blowing up the pipelines over there and in Iraq, so we can't get any oil out of there. And of course, it's not our fault that you're not going to be able to use your car anymore. And people don't understand. There was a fascinating article I was reading today about there's a camp that we've set up, and we have the Iraqi prisoners in the camp. And somebody lobbed 3 mortar shells into the camp full of Iraqi prisoners and killed all the Iraqis. Now, I can't believe that, any Iraqi would do that. And as the camp leader said, I can't understand why anybody would lob mortar shells in. We don't know who did it, but why would anybody lob mortar shells in here to kill the Iraqis? But if they think that's going to get us out of Iraq, they're mistaken. The American troops are going to stay right here. And as I read that, I said, gee, I wonder who it is who lobbed those mortar shells in and killed all those Iraqis. And then, of course, now we're going to use that to keep our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East. Maybe nothing as it appears to be.
Well, I've got to say something. I don't believe that anything is as it appears to be. I like what you say about we embrace the illusions, you know.
Right.
Some people call that we're children of the Matrix. In other words, all we have to respond to is that which is provided for us by the controlled media, the newspapers. That's why it's important for people to support your show, Dr. Stan, because I got to tell you something. I don't know anybody, and I say this as a genuine compliment. The Bible says give credit to where credit's due, honor to whom honor's due. And you've been at this for a long time, and your understanding of history and the background to this stuff is, I don't know anybody, I mean this genuinely, who knows it better than you do. And so if people can follow the logical train of thought and take it to the next, higher level, they're going to understand that all these years you've been talking, warning, informing, urging, pleading, requesting prayer, that there's been a purpose to it. And I got to share this. I believe the destruction on America is going to be so great that we're going to be astonished. A friend of mine who's a wonderful man, he's a deputy sheriff in a western state, had a powerful move of God on his life, and this is just in the last 2 days, and he said that the word that he could not get over that kept forming in his spirit is desolation. America is going to be desolate. We can't understand that now, but can you imagine all the people in Southern California, I'm talking like L.A., the people that are, you know, that's more congested down there, I think, than it is in Monterey, isn't it, right now?
No, I mean, certainly. Yeah. In fact, you know, all we have to do is put a barrier on Highway 17. We're quite isolated here.
Right.
And, of course, it's not that crowded. It's only when all those people come in from the Bay Area that things get crowded in Santa Cruz. And I'll tell you, if anything happens, there'll be a couple of trees that are going to fall down across that highway.
But again, can you imagine the human misery index rising if people can't go any place in their vehicles and the ATM machines don't work with JP Morgan Chase and Citibank's, obviously their ATM terminals across the country were down? Can you imagine the absolute awareness when people who haven't prepared for tough times, they don't have baby formula, if they're, you know, have children, they're not nursing, that they don't have water because there's no electricity. I can't even put into words, and I've got a great vocabulary. I believe God's given me an effective ability to communicate, but I lack words now to try and articulate what I believe is the message that God has put in my heart.
Well, I think that we are to be the watchman on the wall. We're to be warning people and telling them difficult times that lie ahead, and it may be a day, it may be a week, it may be a month, it may be a year, but God is going to get the attention of the people in this country now that we've repudiated him and the church refuses to speak out.
Yeah, the church has gone quiet, and, you know, Jesus said a fabulous statement. Every word he spoke is fabulous, but here's a very telling and pertinent statement of our Lord. He basically said that, we're the salt of the earth. If the salt loses its savor, it's good for nothing, and we get trodden under the foot of man. We have lost our saltiness, and we're being trodden underfoot. And I guess the thing that's amazing to me is the majority, not all, but the majority of churchgoers do not understand what it means to be trodden underfoot of man. That means, in essence, the boots go into your neck, you know? It means you're going to be put into subjection. And I have to be very careful in what I speak from the standpoint, as you do. There are many things I know, but there are many things I have not been released yet, and I'm not trying to sound mysterious or spiritual, but there's a time for everything, and the Bible says a word fitly spoken season, how sweet it is. In other words, there is a time to speak some things, and there is a time not to speak some things. But when it comes to warning and being a watchman, everything at this point that God has given to me, and I'm sure you could say the same thing and amen, you have been as faithful as you know how to be as a human being, yielded to the Spirit of God to bring out those things which God has laid on your heart for the benefit of others.
Well, isn't it strange, a crazy world when people like you and I and so many of the people on talk radio today, certainly Alex Jones and of course Joyce Riley and Noah Webster, Noah Hutchings, although Noah Hutchings is a minister, but you know, we are the ones who are warning the Christian church what's coming on, and they're not getting any warning from the ministers or from most Christian leaders. There are fewer speaking out, but the average person is not saying, don't you realize America faces destruction? And of course, you know, we are called to be the watchman on the wall described in Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33. And our job is to warn. Our job is to point out what's happening, to try to make people grasp this, and people don't want to hear the message. But that's not my job. That's not your job to make them hear. Our job is to tell them. Your job is to tell them. And, of course, if we don't tell them, their blood's on our hands. But if we do tell them and they ignore what we say, and then their blood and the blood of their families is on their hands, and I feel terribly bad for them.
Well, and, you know, again, I understand now why Jesus wept over Jerusalem, you know, and I mean, I've obviously known it intellectually, but when you get a revelation of the heart of God for his creation, how he'll put roadblock after roadblock after roadblock before us to try and keep us from going into harm's way, The God of the universe is absolutely so defined and so, I'd say, generous in his love, mercy, and forgiveness. But there comes a point where a nation and its wicked leaders, when they go against, and God has, I believe, Stan, has already, heaven's decree has already been enough. Judgment falls. I don't believe, you know, like some wishy-washy Christians, well, God knows that we send all the missionaries around the world. No longer do we do that. You know, the thing is that we're at a point now, we are at such a critical flashpoint that everybody who can, you know, entreat the Lord and intercede for others, the point that we're at is that when it does happen, and I don't know when, like you said, a day, a month, a week, a year, but it will happen, and in that day, everything changes forever. You know, one of the most interesting things in the is the statement, in that day, when people were righteous before God, they repented, in that very day that they sought him, turned away from their sin, God made a difference, whether it was delivering the children of Israel away from the hand of the enemy, the destroyers, but also in that day, they talked like when Noah was going into the ark, you know? They didn't know until that day that the floods came and took them away. And Jesus says in Matthew 24, just as in the days of Noah. And I happen to believe that we are living in the same twisted, perverted, and downward spiral that Noah encountered in his day before God put him in the ark.
Well, it was a very, very evil society that existed at that time, and that's why God felt he had to destroy it. And of course, we know that in those days there were Nephilim, and they were, of course, some sort of a hybrid, because of course the sons of the devil or demons cohabited.
Actually, yeah, that Genesis 6, I wrote a whole book on that called Genesis 6 Giants, and in Genesis 6 it's talking about the sons of God looking at the daughters of earth being fair. And that specifically is in the sons of God. When you took the passages in Job, where there was a time when the sons of God, you know, came before the presence of the Lord. That's talking about the angels, and that's where all these myths, all mythology, is based on the fact that angelic beings could transform, if you will, take on themselves a physicality which would enable them to have sex with earth women and reproduce a hybrid. When those hybrid were killed, i.e., Goliath was a hybrid. When Goliath died, that spirit that was in Goliath became the demon. And it's interesting because on my website, if people want to go into this, it's a Giants. I've got 3,000 pages of backup documentation on this stuff. And that's something it took me 30 years to write. And it's a fascinating subject because when you talk about all the great civilizations that have been built, the pyramids, by the way, there were pyramids on every single continent. There are pyramids on what now is the ocean floor, especially off of Okinawa, called Yonguni. And the thing that's fascinating is the ancients had knowledge of the solar system that could not have been gathered or garnered from an earth view. And so the Nephilim comes from the Hebrew word Nepal, which means the fallen ones. They absolutely left their first estate. Now, there are fallen angels that did not have sex with earth women that are still out there causing mayhem. The ones that did have sex with earth women are reserved in a place called Tartarus. It's only used once in the New Testament in Peter, and it talks about that God has reserved those angels in everlasting chains of darkness.
And of course, when you're speaking of the angels, of course, these are all fallen angels. These are not
fallen
angels of God. And they were the fallen angels then that cohabited with women and created these monsters. And you know, as you commented earlier in the first hour when we were talking about UFOs, so much of the encounters, the alien abductions, seem to have sexual connotations, as if they're harvesting semen and eggs, as if somehow they want to be able to reproduce with human beings. And I can't help but have a feeling that there's a very, very definite similarity between as it was in the days of Noah and as it is in the days today.
Absolutely, and that's the basis of my entire treatises that I've written, starting with Aliens and Fallen Angels, The Sexual Corruption of the Human Race, Genesis 6 Giants, Master Builders of Prehistoric and Ancient Civilizations, and now Genetic Armageddon. By the way, Genetic Armageddon, I've said it all. I believe that I can say it. Doesn't mean I couldn't have added more stuff. But the point is that with those three books, it lays the whole fall of man, the tampering with man. And what's fascinating is understand that history records and antiquity records, even the legends of Atlantis record, that the gods judged Atlantis for its tampering with human and animal DNA and the combination thereof.
Yeah.
You know, it's like and I almost called my book Genetic Babylon based on the scripture that, in Genesis where God had to come down and scramble the language because anything they desired to do they would have accomplished. And it's fascinating when you understand that demons, every wicked man who was demon-possessed and died, those demons are looking for a body. Through genetic engineering, they are preparing the bodies and cloning specific bodies that the spirits can inhabit to express their lust. And I want to give you a great definition of lust. I believe it's one that God made clear to me. And simply this, lust is the appetite of demons expressed through humans.
Yeah, that's beautiful. The appetite of demons expressed through humans. Let's get your telephone number out again so
sure.
People can get your book and then, of course, your website.
1-800-424-7870, 1-800-424-7870, and my website is www.stevequayle, all one word, stevequayle.com.
All right, fine, that's 1-800-424-7870, 1-800-424-7870, www.stevequayle.com. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a fascinating 2 hours. We haven't talked like this in a couple of years now, but I really think it's so important that those of us who have a grasp of what's going on share these views and reach as many people as we possibly can. I would like to get you on our early morning program and certainly on our early afternoon program because we probably have some different listeners, and God bless you for everything you've done.
Well, thank you, and God bless you, Dr. Stan, and just thank you for your service to King Jesus, and thank you for telling it like it is.
God bless you. Good night, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That's Steve Quayle, and I hope you've enjoyed our program with him. And, of course, we hope you'll tell others about this program. We hope you'll tell them about Steve's program. And he is certainly the second hour of my program. He broadcasts on Genesis and has a program the hour after that, and he's got a lot of information. We're going to have more of a historical perspective, but we certainly complement one another because we're both pointing towards this spiritual battle being played out here in America today. Well, we're out of time. We just want to ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, and please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow when we've got another fascinating program, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.